Coming up on Life is a Festival.
Beings come here and they think they're going to have a wild sexual experience and they spend most of the time crying. <You know? laughs> Like, what is this? But they feel sexual. They feel alive because it's about life is moving through them. And that's what I feel is very important to note about this particular organism.
Yeah, it's not about fucking. So people really come, many times people come and think they're going to have all kind of crazy sexual experiences in the way that they thought about sexuality before coming here. And when you come here, your perception of what sexuality is changes. And you don't even want sometimes what you wanted before, but you start to be sexy in a completely different way and explore your sexuality and be alive to your sexuality and eros in a completely different way than you thought before, because your thoughts from before were contracted and constructed by the needs of society.
My name is Eamon Armstrong, and this is Life is a Festival. This podcast is a celebration of thinkers and leaders who live their lives with the open-hearted, experimental joy of a festival. Each week, we converse in complete openness, in an ongoing quest to find those boundaries in our being and melt them into lofty horizons. Life is a festival, only to the wise. Well, hello, my fellow travelers. Welcome back to Life is a Festival. Today's episode is an important one to me. Today, we're talking to two of the co-facilitators of the ISTA training that I recently completed in Portugal. And I've been wanting to do ISTA for many years, in fact. So this is something that I've been thinking about and dreaming about. And finally, I did the training. Level one, there are three levels, and I completed level one. And so today on the show, we are going to get to hear all about ISTA. We won't be talking about the curriculum, by the way. Good experience design keeps things a surprise, but we'll talk a lot about the philosophy. And in particular, we'll talk about a technique that I learned in the training that was very helpful to me and can be applied to your own life. So something actionable aside from just the desire to fling yourself to faraway lands to discover shamanic sexuality in an interesting cohort of strange individuals. Okay, so this introduction is going to be a little longer than usual because I want to share a little bit of my own reflections prior to beginning the interview with Ohad and Yasmin. If you want, you can skip ahead. I'll put in the show notes where the interview itself starts. And you can look at the show notes and be like, you know what, Eamon? Not so much of your experience. Let me talk to the professionals. Or you can listen. So here we go. So first of all, we are going to be talking about sex. Not outrageously so, but if you are triggered by aspects of sexuality, proceed with patience and self-care. And this is a shamanic approach to sexuality, or perhaps a sexual approach to shamanism. So the idea is to connect more deeply with our entire being through the portal of sexuality, as well as other practices. So we will be talking about sex. Whatever sort of trigger alert you would like to be alerted about, it is up to you. You can be alerted. I've alerted you now. So first of all, why did I do an ISTA training? So ISTA is the International School of Temple Arts. We'll talk about it on the program. And I'd heard about it a number of years ago, and I was thinking this might be particularly impactful for me because my personal sexuality is very cerebral and very fantasy-based. One of the karmic burdens of my earth walk this time around. In fact, my most potent karmic burden, I would say, is around sexuality, love, and intimacy. And for me, it's difficult for me to connect intimately. I get scared, I suppose would be a way to put it. But really being fully embodied in complete naked vulnerability with the beloved is something that's been a struggle through my whole life. And as I've had many conversations with dear friends, ISTA has come up time and time again as a potential container in which to explore these challenges that I face. And it did not disappoint. It is definitely the most impactful curriculum I've ever approached in regard to sexuality. And I've had sex therapists and I've done workshops and done various things. ISTA was something else. And part of what it does is it's a cohort-based educational experience. So you're there for a week with, in my case, 40 people in southern Portugal. And the environment itself is an open sexual container. Now, of course, there are rules. There's always rules. Keep people safe. And there's a specific pacing to the program and how things open up. But in general, not only are you learning certain ways of understanding sexual energy, but you're actually able to apply them. And that's a lot of what I did. I did a lot of that. So we talk a lot about the shadow in this, and the title of the episode is Sex and Shamanic Shadow Hunting. And just to be clear, if you are not familiar with the idea of the shadow, it harkens back to the Jungian archetypal concepts. The shadow is essentially that which you are not aware of. It's that you can't see. If you're aware of it, it's not really the shadow. It might just be something you don't like. But the shadow is sort of often seen as like these unconscious patterns that play out. And shamanic shadow hunting is a process of bringing those into the light, becoming aware of patterns. And that's a big part of what I spent the week doing. We'll talk about that a lot on the program. ISTA is divided into three levels, level one, level two, level three. We don't really talk about two or three in this interview. I hope to do at least level two, and I'll have an interview about that. But this is mainly focused on level one, which is really about personal sovereignty through the lens of sexuality and spirituality. It was very impactful, and there's some really cool things that I did that I will not tell you about because you must go do them yourself. Finally, how my perception of sexuality has changed from ISTA. And I think that this will come out in future podcasts, but I feel like there was a widening of possibility and potential in the erotic for me. I feel like I had gotten myself in kind of a narrow lane through training my brain to specific erotic triggers. And I feel like my experience in ISTA widened that frame and allowed me to see a much broader way of approaching sexuality. So here's just a little bit about what you'll have on the show today. So we talk about what temple arts are. We discuss Yasmin and Ohad's initiation to magic. We talk about why ISTA, why it's needed, why they're involved. We talk about the idea of bringing life force to interrupt our negative patterns and to liberate sexual energy. We discuss specifically a technique called shamanic shadow hunting and the four stages of shamanic shadow hunting. We talk about bringing consciousness to all areas of the physical body. And then we finish up with a little bit of the structure and facilitation of ISTA, how healing the erotic is depolarizing. And finally, because I feel like it was worth asking about, we talk about ISTA in the era of Me Too. Because, you know, sexual facilitation is a tricky business in this modern world, but more needed than ever. A word about the faculty and who you'll be hearing from today. There were three facilitators. I will joke on the program that there were four for me, but there were three facilitators. And I chose not to interview the mighty, brilliant Caitlin Cook, just because three on the show would have been harder. So decided to talk to Ohad and Yasmin. But just a word on Caitlin Cook, really an amazing person and someone who I had a very lovely connection with. In addition to her work with ISTA, she actually does Bwiti retreats in Gabon, which, as you know, if you've been following the program, I experienced an Iboga initiation with the Bwiti people. And Caitlin has also had that experience and now facilitates those retreats in Gabon, and really an exceptional woman and someone who I may have on the program sometime in the future. Regarding our guests today, we have Pele Ohad. And Pele is a lead facilitator in ISTA. He's been teaching Kabbalah, sacred sexuality, and conscious relating for more than 30 years. So he was a traditional Kabbalist rabbi in Jerusalem, as well as an academic scholar and a community leader. And he's actually known as one of the most influential and radical spiritual teachers in Israel. Before joining ISTA, Ohad was heading the Hebraic Academy of Universal Spirit in Tel Aviv. He's also an artist, a photographer, and a songwriter, and author of the historical fiction Kadesha, a timeless tale of a love priestess. And we'll put that in the show notes so you can check it out. Yasmin Hanna has been exploring the ancient temple arts from a very young age. And she was very impressive in the retreat. And then when I looked at her bio, I was like, oh my goodness, this woman has done all of the great spiritual things. I mean, she's studied Vipassana meditation, Ayurveda, Kundalini yoga, plant medicine, and really focuses a lot on ancient Egyptian embodiment practices. She grew up in a very rigid religious Islamic household in Egypt. And so this really interesting contrast between Ohad and Yasmin, and we'll talk about that on the show. Today, she organizes and co-facilitates Kemetic and African shamanic yoga teacher trainings in Luxor and also offers Egyptian mystery retreats, blue lotus ceremonies. She facilitates with Ista, of course, and she holds a point at Haydn Mystery School in New Zealand. Oh my gosh. So these are two really potent spiritual teachers, three teachers as well, including Caitlin, and the way they all worked together was quite potent, was quite profound. In addition, we had about seven assistant facilitators that were just all remarkably devoted. And the whole experience was like a magical mystery sex tour. I jokingly called it shamanic sex camp, which in a way kind of was. I even had my own summer camp girlfriend while I was there. So big shout out to, I will not name names of other participants, but a big shout out to my summer camp girlfriend and fourth facilitator who helped me through many things by lovingly nurturing me and also triggering the hell out of me, which turns out is exactly what you need in an environment like this. Huge shout out to the Arada Valley Retreat Center and to all of the amazing people working there. A shout out to my cohort and to all the people who went through this wild journey with me. I had really magical, special moments with all of you. So thank you for listening to my long preamble. It was such an honor to interview my facilitators after they facilitated me. And I'm so grateful for their time. And I hope you enjoy this podcast. As always, please reach out if you have any reflections. You can reach out to me on Instagram at Eamon Armstrong. You can also join our Life is a Festival Facebook group if you want to talk more about these lofty matters. So this was a lot of ado, so there will be no further ado. Here are Yasmin Hanna and Ohad Pele for ISTA, the International School of Temple Arts. Enjoy. Okay, here we are. So we've just finished an ISTA level one course. Literally, we've just had lunch. So I am quite raw. I was just telling Ohad that being raw is a nice place from which to create art. So I have the enormous privilege of now being a facilitator to my facilitators, which is such a treat. And I'm so honored that you've chosen to allot some of your very precious time to this show today. So Yazi, Ohad, welcome to Life is a Festival.
I love that. Yes. Life's a festival.
Life is a festival. Well, we can make it a festival. And there's ways we do that. One of the ways that I feel like I make my life a festival is doing things that are hard that make me happier later. Because I feel like if I don't do the hard things, they build up and then life gets very slow and kind of dragged down. And so an ISTA is, in many ways, it kind of cleans out the pipes. I've been wanting to do an ISTA training for a long time, and it's been recommended to me. And it was recommended to me as a neo-tantric sex school. Someone said it was a neo-tantric sex school, which I've, it's wrong. I've learned that this is inaccurate. So ISTA stands for the International School of Temple Arts. So as a starting place, what is a temple art?
Temple arts. It's a bunch of arts that were practiced in ancient temples all over the planet, even though those temples were dedicated to different deities from ancient Egypt and ancient Israel and the South Americans and Japan and all over the world. There were temples, and what's important for us is that the arts of those temples included sacred sexuality as part of the offering of what is the sacred and how to approach the sacred. So in many, 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 many world traditions, the temple arts were including dance and plant medicines and singing and architecture, as well as how to approach a human being and a community and a tribe through eros and sexuality, and how this sexuality is not just a thing that's happening between you and a lover, but it's actually much more than that. The universe is making love through you, and when you are making love, it's allowing universal powers to flow through you. So it's healing for you, for the tribe. It can bring up personal deep transformations, sex magic, and all these kind of things.
Sex magic sounds so cool, but it's not easy, right? So it seems like if it were easy, we'd all be doing it.
Mm. It is easy. The best magic is making a child. You know? Actually, we are creating magic all the time. Magically, you're creating this podcast now. I mean, we are creating magic all the time. The thing is that we're not aware that we are magicians in action. And through your sex, you're also creating the next steps of your life. Most people have casual, sad, undeveloped sex, so they create their lives accordingly.
It seems, though, that there requires some kind of an initiation into the experience of magic in this way. Maybe that's because our modern lives are so non-magical, they're so transactional and atomized, but that there's a kind of initiation. Sometimes it's like a plant medicine initiation. There's something where you sort of pass through a portal that allows you to see things in a new way, to access things. And I feel like this ISTA level one training that I just did feels like such a portal. I'm curious about the way that both of you have been initiated into, not necessarily even this work, but you know that stepping through a portal into seeing that the world is magical, that first time in one's life that many of us have who grew up with some degree of repression in our our landscape, which I think is pretty much everyone. Mm-hmm. Yazzie, what was your first kind of initiation, or how did you feel initiated into this idea of magic in the world?
Right. I feel actually if I share what I feel magic is. I feel it's seeing things as they are, and nature is magic. Nature itself is magic. Even if we look at the word temple arts, for me, it's just the temples are synchronized and in union with nature. Even the way they're set up, even the structure, even where they're located, it's all based around the structures of nature. And so I feel letting some of the filters down and seeing things more as they are, and then starting to live in this nature elemental world, something is bound to happen. It's magic, it's creative, it's really in sync with the creation of life itself, of the universe. So for me, my initiation came to pinpoint one. I feel like it was my confrontation with death. If I'm to be so honest, it wasn't like a sweet journey in the forest. It was like actually this realization at a young age. Yeah, especially entering my teens. And I was a very religious girl. So for me, this nature of life, existence, heaven, hell, God, but especially death, realizing that I'm just here for what's going to be a blink of an eye. No one really cares about me. There's billions of people on the planet. Who am I? That's so significant. And then actually having this really intimate relationship with this force of nature, that's death. I feel like this intimate dance and actually really somewhat crossing that threshold of feeling my soul on the other side almost was my initiation, and realizing I had a choice whether I'm going to fully live or not. And in that moment, I woke up and I remember that moment so clearly where I said to myself, Yasmin, you are the director of this show, which is your life. This is your movie. So how are you going to direct it? And most importantly, let's have fun with this. So I started to have fun and I created some pretty crazy things. But at that moment, I chose it. So I was already aware of who's aware inside of me and who's making these choices. And this was about 18 years old, 17, 18. So I'd say that was probably my significant initiation.
And you grew up in Egypt. Were you still in Egypt at this time?
Yeah, yes.
Ohad, how about you? When was the initiatory moment for you, or at least the first? Because I imagine there were many.
Yeah, there were many, and I can't even remember the first. Because I do remember myself as a very little child, kind of standing in the world with this kind of a feeling of, what the fuck? Like, how did I end up here? This kind of alienation from the world. Like, you know, I grew up in Israel, to a very good family, mainstream family, nothing special kind of thing. And my parents were really good parents, and they wanted the best for me, and they did the best they can to make me another mainstream person. And as a child, it was bizarre for me. So I don't know actually how I was initiated to the... I think I was born this way. I don't know. I went through a lot of initiations to actually claim it and to realize what is the magic of my life and how does it go. And I took me through shamanism and Buddhism and many years of Kabbalah and Judaism and blah, blah. Lots and lots of spiritual paths and many years of that just to remember the primordial sound of the melody of my soul. It was more listening to all kind of melody, like, you know, this feeling of like, I know something and I don't know what it is. So maybe you have this melody and can you sing me your song? It's like, oh yeah, it has something, but it's not that. Listening to different songs and collecting a little bit from here, a little bit from there until something woke up and it's like, actually, I compose my song.
You know, that reminds me of ISTA itself, actually. Mm-hmm. A little bit from here, a little bit from there. Mm-hmm. And also you were saying that, and I really resonate with this, and I think it's actually a better framing than my initial question. Mm-hmm. It's not so much to initiate into something that wasn't there. It's the remembering, the claiming, the taking back power. Yeah. Kind of like Alan Watts talks about God playing hide and seek with herself. You know, mm-hmm, we're sort of like, mm-hmm, we're these divine beings, yep, that need to come home. And the coming home is both exquisitely painful and profoundly beautiful and ultimately pleasurable, which is, again, like sex, or like the sexual rediscovery that I feel like is one of the offerings, and perhaps the offering that ISTA is most famous for, but not actually what we're doing here, which was fascinating to me.
Yeah.
So we're not going to give away any of the curriculum on the show. So mm-hmm, listeners, the idea here is that we will whet your appetite and gives you some tools. But without speaking of the curriculum itself for ISTA Level 1, mm-hmm, what were we doing here? Like what in your hearts, in your words, why come to sunny southern Portugal to be around a bunch of weirdos for a week, facilitating them doing weird things with each other? Mm-hmm. Yazzie, what brings you here to this place, and what were we doing here? It just, you know,
briefly, right,
in your own words.
I feel that this work rewires something in our neurology. And we're pretty neurotic people as a humanity. And it's the conditioning we're brought up in. And there's just certain things that just require a little bit of tweaking, if you know what I mean, to just bring us back in the flow where we're actually living more fully, more present, more alive, and less ashamed, less fearful, less guilty, and able to really actually open up and have empowered, human, mature relationships with ourselves and with other beings. So I feel that this is it's a curriculum that I feel is designed for young adults, like really older children, kind of young teenagers. And so we're pretty much just like rewiring the parts of our inner child and teenager so that we can step up and become more mature human beings. And that requires a lot, you know, some reparenting and some feeling our inner masculine and feminine and starting to feel our bodies again and connecting intimately with our sex and with ourself as a beloved. And just a few things here and there so that we actually leave. But beings come and they come again and they share with others because they feel that they're actually able to start feeling empowered in the world. And I feel the world as it is created and society in a way disempowers beings and disconnects them from their sex, disconnects them from what they really want to say. This whole thing about speaking up, sharing who we are, being authentic is a huge thing for a lot of beings who from a young age are told to be quiet, don't say that, this is who you are, this is your religion, this is your culture, these are your robes, this is how you're going to talk. And so adults, there's this contraction and this kind of inner block or constipation in a way. Actually, ISTA is a laxative in some way, you could say. It's a laxative for the soul and it's an laxative for just allowing more energy and more life to move through the body. It's very simple. And as you've done it, you can feel like, you know, it's playful too. I love to feel like we're a bunch of divine children. And usually at the end of a training, I see that we truly are a bunch of divine children. We play. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Easter for me is give level one. Level one is handing people the right to be sovereign being again. Mm-hmm. And our sovereignty was taken from us by the way society is structured, family, society, religion. And a lot of it was taken from us by controlling our sexuality, controlling our passion, our connection to our own bodies, and infusing it with fear, with shame, and with guilt. Religions did it magnificently. And patriarchy did it wonderful. And it plays for creating a society where people are soldiers and they, you can send them to war. And they would give their lives for the country. What does it even mean? And it stands for people giving their lives to create families that will teach the next generation to give their lives to create families that will give their lives to create families. And no one is actually fucking alive because everybody is just sacrificing their lives, becoming a victim of their own sacrifice, teaching their children to sacrifice themselves and become martyrs and demanding the same from their children. So we say stop. Basically what we say in Easter is stop. This is wrong. This is not who you really are. I mean, if you want to, go ahead, continue. But we give you different tools that help the person remember you are something else and you're a magnificent being and you have the right to actually live. Mm-hmm. And it's not to survive. It's not to drag one day after another. It's not to conform to society or to your job or to anything. It's actually being in the wonder of the mystery of who you are. What is this life about? What is nature? What is relationship? And what is this amazing energy that runs through you when you're horny?
What is it indeed? And how can I control it? How can I control it and bend it to my will so that I can get exactly, status and I can get all the things I need?
So exactly that's what society does. It tells you, oh, this is wrong. And the only way that you deal with it is control it. Mm. Control it and bend it and use it to gain status in society and to gain some place in heaven or hell. Of religions. And what we say is actually, no, don't control it. Be aware. There's a big difference between becoming aware and controlling. Actually, the more aware and sensitive and awake you are, less control is needed. You don't need control at all. You can be totally out of control because you are aware and sensitive and awake in the world. And that takes love. So in another way, Easter is really about love, but not the personal lovey-dovey between people, but love as an awakened being, as an awakened way to be in the world.
Yeah, that awareness is really the essence of it. I came here to Easter because my own relationship to my sexuality has been fraught my whole life, has been this experience of control. Can I use it to get love, to get status? But I can't really control it because my dick doesn't do what I want it to do. And so I need to fix it. But I could take some Cialis and maybe that'll help. And just being here, it's so funny how when you enter into one of these experiences, you expect that there'll be an aha moment that will actually work within the framework you came in with. So it's like these things that like, maybe I'm gay or maybe I watch too much porn or like somehow coming to this place will answer this question that is, they're the wrong questions anyway. And what I really got from this experience is the awareness of, and actually you're saying, talking about this before we started the podcast, the idea that these shadows are fractals, that they're dependent upon each other, and to just take a step and look, to have awareness of like, it's not one thing and it's not thing that I'm really thinking about. It's this entire way in which I don't honor myself. And then what I see as a problem is my inability to execute the goals that I have that are fundamentally based on the problem itself. So the goal is like status and sexuality. I want this girl to like me. I want to be partnered and have love. And I keep cycling these same patterns. Mm-hmm. And so coming to ISTA, it seems like there's two things that are running side by side. There's the curriculum, which is wild. And then there's a cohort community experience concurrently. So we're in a situation where it's like, here's a place you can explore your sexuality with a bunch of beings that have come here to explore. So you're already kind of like a Burning Man or a festival. You're with people who have the intention that they want to be experimental. So you're here and you can do things.
Yes, and we give tools. Unlike Burning Man or, you know, we actually give you tools so you can stalk yourself and you can get awakened to see what you usually don't see, because usually you live within your patterns. Mm-hmm. They feel home, even though it's an awkward home. You're like you're wearing a suit that was not tailored to you, but actually was made for, you know, for the needs of society, not for you. And it feels awkward, but you live within this suit and you don't see it from the outside. And what we allow is tools that you can actually express who you are, even though it might tear the suit because it doesn't sit well on you. And then you can actually see the patterns that running you. And when you see the patterns, that's the first step to be awakened and to interrupt the patterns. And as you said, they are fractals and they're all connected one on the other. And those patterns are made for you to be mistaken in them. So as you said very well, like you think you're going to solve the problems, but the problems to begin with are made by society to make you small. And once you, when you wake up, you see that you're actually in a maze. And maybe you can step out of the maze.
And I just, when you said, it's about sexuality, I just want to note that ISTA is, yes, it's about sexuality, but it's not sexuality in the sense that it's about sex. And I feel this is a really important thing to note. People come here, beings come, and they just experience the whole week on their own, having a very solo, deep journey with themselves. And they still are working with sexuality because they're working with their own life force energy. So these patterns get interrupted by bringing life force to meet them. And a lot of our, like what you said, the pipes just need a bit of unblocking. So this life force energy just needs to start flowing. And there might be a little block here, a little clunky thing here, da 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 da. So the patterns get interrupted less by doing or thinking or consciously doing something about it, by actually just bringing life to meet the body, meet the senses, meet the heart especially. Beings come here and they think they're going to have a wild sexual experience and they spend most of the time crying. <You know? laughs> Like, what is this? But they feel sexual. They feel alive because it's about life is moving through them. And that's what I feel is very important to note about this particular organism.
Yeah, it's not about fucking. So people really come, many times people come and think they're going to have all kind of crazy sexual experiences in the way that they thought about sexuality before coming here. And when you come here, your perception of what sexuality is changes. And you don't even want sometimes what you wanted before, but you start to be sexy in a completely different way and explore your sexuality and be alive to your sexuality and eros in a completely different way than you thought before, because your thoughts from before were contracted and constructed by the needs of society.
Well, and it's the water you swim in. So that makes sense to me intellectually, but then to witness it in the way that I was able to witness here makes the difference. Yeah. Like I never would have thought, although now it's so obvious to me, that I have been out of consent with myself whilst having sex as a man. I've had sex so many times when it has not been pleasurable to me because I wanted to be witnessed by a woman as a powerful heterosexual man. And I wanted to win love and attention, and I wanted to be the guy, and I wanted her to think I was an excellent lover. And my body has not wanted it at all. Mm-hmm. And yet I've been here trying to have this experience.
Yeah, and you've been educated to think that your body, first of all, needs to serve than what your mind wants. Your mind wants some status, and the body is a slave of that. And whether you're a man or a woman, many people just enslave their bodies sexually to answer to the needs of the minds of the mind. And yeah, this is also an unspoken phenomena that men think they're supposed to always want sex and always perform. And truthfully, no, you don't always want sex. Sometimes, as we hear, and we heard here just even today from one person, like, all I want is actually to cuddle and to connect. I want my heart to, I want to connect. And so many times, men and women, but also men, have sex not because they really want to, but because they think they're supposed to perform. And there is sadness behind this, and there is grief, and there is a betrayal of ourselves.
I don't know if I'm going to leave this in on the podcast, but I just had the most beautiful deja vu dream feeling. Like, I feel like I just dreamed you saying that to me, like just now. Ooh, I love that feeling. It just makes me feel like there's something bigger. I don't know if I'll keep that in or not. But a moment ago, you said this expression, stalking yourself. And I don't want to lose that, because to me, this was of everything we did. And we did things that were very impactful on my whole system. But the lesson that was most impactful to me this whole week was the one I kept using over and over again, was this idea of stalking yourself, which we talked about as hunting shadows. And Yazzie, I think you were the one who was giving the talk about shadow hunting.
Mm-hmm. We both did.
You both did. Yeah, you both did together. Indeed. Yeah. But I recall the way you had a certain kind of poetry in some of the things you said at that moment. So I think I'm remembering you. Mm-hmm. But you talked about it as like stalking like buffalo. And for me, it so neutered it and depersonalized my shadow work. So I've been thinking this whole week in terms of these buffalo and these big fat buffalo that I'm hunting. Mm-hmm. But I think it's something that whether or not our listeners are going to attend an ISTA level one retreat, or rather training, pardon me, retreat is, I don't think the right word, this particular strategy of self-observation is a easy or a straightforward four-step process. And I would love for you, Yazzie, to start, or maybe both to share, what does it mean to be a shamanic shadow hunter?
Beautiful. Yeah, so hunting was a big part of, you know, living as indigenous community. We kind of knew the art of hunting. And when you go to hunt an animal, you know, just jump out of the bush like a wild person and start screaming and yelling and get out your weapon, that's going to run away. Same like our shadows. Our shadows are there. They are created by often our young structure, our young mind as children or as young adults to cope with the world. And so it requires a sense of, first of all, just coming with some an open-heartedness towards it, which means that we're actually being kind and sweet to ourselves and to the parts of ourselves that we are feeling are kind of diminishing our human experience of being alive, but at the same time, not judging it and poking and wanting to destroy it. Like that whole thing of, I want to get rid of this. I'm going to burn this out, or I'm going to throw a paper in the fire. And it's like, it's kind of coming to me with a bit of an aggressive, almost sometimes even violent attitude of, I need to kill something. I need to destroy this in me. And so that for me just makes the shadow even bigger. You've just fed it. You haven't killed it. You've fed it. You've made it fatter and bigger, and it's going to come now and even stalk you even more. So the first thing is important to be sweet and kind to ourselves, and also kind with the parts of ourselves that have habits, bad habits, have certain things that we don't like about ourselves, patterns that we see reoccurring. So it's the first very important step, is be sweet and kind to yourself and to the shadow.
Yeah, it's a gratitude towards, I mean, every shadow that we have was created by our genius young mind, which is, I'm sometimes so fascinated by the human nature. It's like, how does a, you know, 3 years old know to put things in the subconsciousness? You know, it's like, it's amazing the way that we cope with the world and all those mechanisms that we have of defense and protection and freeze and, you know, all those mechanisms that we have, including the ways that we cope with traumas, are basically genius. So there is a lot to have gratitude towards our young self that created those shadows for us. Now it's time to hunt, to eat these shadows, because they hold a lot of energy, like a big fat buffalo. But it starts with gratitude, like Native American people, you know, would hunt a buffalo and they would first, you know, make a buffalo dance and have gratitude to the spirit of the animal. Not coming from hatred, but from like, thank you, we appreciate you. And please cooperate with us in this hunting. We're all connected to each other.
Mm-hmm. Right, because behind the shadow is our power, basically. So cooperate with me. I'm ready to have my power back. Yeah.
Yeah, you refer to it as like that you eat the shadow and then you like shit rainbows or shit light or shit some kind of magical something. But that there's definitely some kind of metabolic process that happens when you repurpose that energy.
And it's, yeah, there's a saying, I think it's from our friend David Katz, who said that a shaman is a person that eats shadow and shits light. Yeah. But you need to have a good digestive system for that. Otherwise you eat shadow and it actually eats you. Mm. Like shadow work is not simple. So it's like going hunting. You go hunting a buffalo, it might also kill you. So you need good tools, and these are the tools that we're teaching. The sweetness and is just the first tool in stalking your shadows, and you need to know when is the right time to do something about it and how to do that. And this is in the training.
And the second piece was patience. And I just want to acknowledge patience, mm-hmm. because I think patience is probably the most valuable tool I have in my tool belt for this week. Because the thing about, for me, with my shadows, particularly my shadows in terms of relationships and sexuality, is that I do the thing that you were describing. Like I see the buffalo and I'm like, oh, I'm going to come get you. And the buffalo's like, I'm going to win the same way I always win. Yeah. So like you have this gratitude, you have this sweetness, and then patience. And it's patience with the shadow and with the buffalo, but also patience with myself, mm-hmm. and patience with my, what level of consciousness am I at this stage in my life that I can actually change this? And if it's not right now, then that's actually okay that I can't change this right now.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. You want to speak about it?
Go for it.
Yeah. Patience is an important thing for a hunter, because you need to learn the patterns of the animal. How does it behave? Where is the right time and space to shoot it? And you need to have patience for that, to learn the ways that your shadow behaves. Mm-hmm. So actually, if I don't have patience with myself, I'm not intelligent. I'm just rushed, like in a childish way. And once we understand that it took years to create those patterns of subconscious patterns that, and things that control you. So when they come again and you find yourself in this pattern, you actually have the patience to like, okay, I am in this pattern and I'm aware that I'm in this pattern and I'm curious. Mm. And the curiosity, which is a big part of science, any science, is just like, let's be curious about it. Let's actually observe. See how I behave. What's happening? What are the subtleties? Because it's not that you meet a girl and whatever, you end up with a heartbreak or whatever it is. There are many, many, many sub-stages, things that happen that you usually don't pay attention to. So the first thing is just pay attention. Wake up, pay attention, be curious, learn the pattern of this buffalo. How does it move? Have the patience to learn. Mm. And only then you find the right way and the right time to shoot the arrow. Mm-hmm. Arrow to your shadow.
So there is one additional facilitator to yourselves, Caitlin.
Caitlin was with us, yes.
Magical, is not Absolutely. Here for this interview. I had a fourth facilitator for my mm-hmm. for my workshop, which was the woman that I had a romance with here, yeah. Was my fourth facilitator. And it was interesting because you're talking about the curiosity and the patience. And I watched in this truncated manner, I watched myself just do the things that I do. Mm-hmm. And it's interesting because I'm not mad at myself about it. I'm like, oh, I chose this, then this happened. And I don't think I've ever had that level of, as you say, awareness. Mm. Have you heard of this this poem, An Autobiography in 5 Chapters?
No.
Have you ever? Oh, it's so good. Okay. Mm. Paraphrasing because I don't have it memorized. Mm-hmm. But chapter 1, I walk down a street.
Ah, this one, yes.
Yeah, you know this one? Okay. Yeah. For the listener or for Yazzie, if you haven't heard it. Chapter 1, I walk down a street. There's a hole. I fall in it. It's not my fault. It takes forever to get out. Chapter 2, I walk down a street. There's a hole. I fall in it. Not my fault. It takes a while to get out. Chapter 3, I walk down a street. There's a hole. I fall in it. It is my fault. I climb out quickly. Chapter 4, I walk down a street. There's a hole. I walk around it. And then my favorite of all, chapter 5, I walk down a different street.
That's so good. Wow.
Yeah.
Yeah. What a teaching. Yeah.
And that's a peak aspect here is like, at what point have you gone down the street, seen the hole, like taking the responsibility is huge. We're like, ooh, I am doing this, which I fully feel like this week. I was like, I am making everything that is happening happen. Like I am doing all of this. I'm responsible for all of it. Mm-hmm. But at a certain point, when you've been patient, when you've learned the patterns, there comes a time to actually change it.
Right. There comes a time, but it's a beautiful point. I feel like first it's just letting the pattern run almost one unconsciously. And then there's a beautiful stage is to start to be aware. It's like, oh, this again. I'm so aware of it, but I'm still doing it, which is a wonderful stage. And then finally, eventually, it's to shoot that arrow and actually shift that pattern. And as you said so beautifully, Ohad, in the training, is like that moment, I like to feel it like it's that moment, you know, those mornings I wake up and there's something different in my body. And there's this tingling feeling in my belly. And I just feel like something's about to change. And it's like that impulse from deep inside. It's like, I'm going to make that change. And something happens. And you said it beautifully. It's like a slow motion kind of.
Yeah, in the right moment. When you're ready for that, you see what's happening in slow motion.
Yeah.
You see yourself doing it. It's like, you know, Neo in the Matrix, you know, seeing the bullet, and there is enough resolution in the time dimension to move aside, to move away from the bullet, change the pattern, take a different route. But the thing with the main culture that we live in today is that you go in the road and there is a hole and you fall in the hole, and what you're dealing with is, who can I sue for that? Whose responsibility is that? Who can I blame? And, you know, in my song, Cosmic Snake, there's a line that says, when you claim back your power, there's no one to blame. And that's really one of the core things of Easter. It's like, it's really boring to live life in a way, you know, that you blame your parents for the childhood, you blame your ex-partners for whatever. It's like, okay, but who are you and why do you walk this street? Maybe you can wake up and see that it's not about blaming, not even blaming yourself. You know, what I don't like about this poem, that in the way that you recited it, is it's my fault. It's not your fault, but it might be your responsibility. Mm. There is a big difference. You know, religions made it all about fault and sin. It's not that, but taking responsibility, meaning I learn and I can take a different route.
So that's one of the tools, my favorite, because I just love talking about hunting. People would be like, how's your day going? I'd be like, buffalo wild today, hunting some buffalo, a lot of buffalo today. It was just such a cute way of talking about it. But it really, at the end of the day, it's like a tool to take responsibility. And I like what you're saying, that you don't even blame yourself. You're just like, it's a pattern. I've chosen someone whose pattern fits in with mine perfectly. And it's very similar to the patterns that I've had with other people I've chosen. So there's that kind of becoming aware conceptually. There's also another awareness that really came to me through the work in ISTA, which is the awareness of disembodied or exiled aspects in my own physical body. So this idea of consciousness being disconnected from the physical body and the ability to bring that consciousness back into the physical body. And for me, that process, as I experienced it here, particularly in some really potent rituals, was an experience that for me was properly shamanic. Like, I didn't expect that you could do a week without any sort of medicines and have something that was shamanic on this level. Mm. And I'm not sure what the precise name for it is, but that shamanic process of bringing consciousness to these alienated parts of your own being goes hand in hand with becoming aware of your shadows too. And for me, I found that after becoming more in touch with my physical body, I was less reactive, my nervous system was less reactive, which allowed me to be calmer in my observance of my patterns. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, beautiful. I just feel like life force is such a powerful medicine, and our erotic current is so powerful. And with that, we can go into trance-like states. And this is what I feel a lot of the medicines or a lot of shamanic work does. It carries people into trance-like states, dancing for hours, you know, to a certain rhythm. And this was really important in ancient cultures. It's like shifting the neurological patterning. They knew that. Like, trance was also connected to memory. And so by kind of like shaking up, you know, the stagnant waters of our memory and allowing fresh water to flow through. And so in that, it's things are going to get stirred because the water has been muddy and it has been sticky and has been lying around for so long that when fresh water and energy starts to move through, the muck is going to be shaken and we're going to be able to see it. And that's what I feel like the shamanic aspect is bringing more energy, bringing more life. That is a part of our nature. Nature is full of it. It's constantly renewing itself, regenerating itself, and so are we. But sometimes I feel like we get stuck. And so plant medicine on one way supports meditation, but what I feel working with our erotic current as a medicine, allowing that to journey us into trance-like states, especially because we were born from sexual energy, because it's so deeply embedded in our deep, deep, deep cellular memory, like as the origin, as the source. So when we dive deep into that, I feel like we shift things like at the heart, really at the heart or the center of what matters in our life. So, yeah. Mm-hmm. Mm.
Yeah, and what you said about embodiment, I mean, Ista's journey is an embodied journey. I mean, it's funny because we're sitting here and talking and it's all words, but...
we are on a bed, so, you know, this isn't... I keep shifting around, I like, feel my legs.
Yes.
But yes, for our listeners, they're just hearing voices intimately in their ear pods or whatever.
Yeah, and Ista is an embodied journey. So indeed, we give some teachings, but we allow everybody to feel the embodiment of that. Like, so it's a journey with the body, but the difference is that it's not forcing the body. Many, many things that the modern person is doing with the body, including sexuality, is actually a rape, self-rape. Self-rape of our own sexuality, self-rape of our own body, usually in the service of the mind, sometimes in the service of uncontrolled emotions, and because usually they're so controlled, and then they're like there is an eruption. The other side of trying to control your emotions is eruption of your emotions, and many people in the... Then the emotions are just taking over. And the body is pissed off, to be honest, and this is why people are sick, and they don't have energy, and they're in fatigue, because the body is just pissed off like a slave. It's like, why am I in slavery of your fucked up mind and your eruptive emotions? Who's going to actually listen to the wisdom of the body? The body is nature. The body is an animal. And animals are intelligent, including the human animal. And what we try to develop here is all kind of tools that actually allow people to finally create some silence inside and be curious about listening to the body itself. And then the body starts to show up. And it's a journey towards integration. Ista is a journey towards integration of spirituality and sexuality that are not contradicting each other. Many people project the wild sexuality of their repressed sexuality brain. So because sexuality is so repressed, the other side is like, oh, and then when you let go of that, there is like all the monsters are, you know, out of control and who knows what's happening there. But actually what we're doing is attending to the animal. And like all wild animals, they are innocent. There's an expression that I really love that we use in Ista of wild innocence. So your animal, when it's not repressed, is actually wild and it's also innocent. It doesn't, no animal wants to do harm. Even predators, they don't want to do harm. They eat what they need and it actually supports the ecosystem. So the same is with the animal that is called human. The thing is that we just try, the tyranny of the mind is not letting this animal be innocently wild.
Well, and I feel like it has to be experienced. That's why something like this is so helpful, because I've read so many books and I've had so many conversations mm-hmm. about what to do about my repressed sexuality. And I constantly think about it. And it's like all this kind of like buzzing up here when really to really listen, mm-hmm. to listen to the body physically, to listen to what's moving in it, and then to observe the patterns concurrently. To me, that's a pretty like revolutionary way for me to approach what has been an entirely cerebral kind of masturbatory exercise
yeah.
of like, how do I solve this problem that is me, which can get boring for everyone, but most especially for yourself if you have to be there all the time.
It's an experiential journey. Ista is an experiential journey with the body, with the emotions, with everything that you are. And
as is life, an experiential journey, as exactly. with emotions. So it's exactly. just taking a chunk of life and just actually looking at it. Like looking, this is life. This is how we live. And looking at ourselves, just looking deeper into ourselves as life.
So Ista is interesting in that it doesn't have any kind of guru energy to it. Mm. And I personally found the facilitation to be masterful. There's I was really, really impressed by the way that you both and Caitlin as well and assistant support as well just responded to all of the humans. Like the humans would come up and they would say their piece or whatever exercise it was or whatever sort of like reflections. And there was such a beautiful, generous facilitation that didn't seem to be guided by a doctrine or guided by, before I came here, I didn't have any idea about who started this. Ista isn't kind of projected into the world as a lineage, as a guru. So this environment is something where the facilitation I feel like was really masterful. And I'm curious from both of you how facilitation came to be in your own lives. Like how did you learn how to see a human's needs and respond to them in the subtle and nuanced sort of slight corrections or slight reflections or invitations or opportunities, how is it that you're able to witness a human and invite that out of them in an environment that seems really without doctrine and really without a kind of like clear set of guidelines of what is to be done with mm-hmm. anyone's problems?
Mm-hmm. Well, it's a journey of many years. I'm teaching and facilitating for I think 32 years, much before Ista. So I was a rabbi, as I told you, as you know, and I was teaching Kabbalah and I was working with communities and I failed many times because I was arrogant and I came with a doctrine. I was a religious person, so I had many, many doctrines and many ideas about life, and I saw how they all fail and how eventually we just need to be humble and present and deeply listen and be aware. For me, the key is just awareness to what actually happening. So when I see someone giving their spiel, if I'm really aware, I listen to what they say, but I also listen to their body language. That tells me a lot of what they're not saying. And I feel the energy field, and I feel what I feel in my own. I'm listening not only with my mind, I'm listening with my body, and I see if my body is relaxing, or my body is excited, or my body is bored. or if there is a clench in my system, I listen to that. So then I know how to, I respond fresh. I'm not responding from a doctrine or a dogma, but I'm like, I'm listening to you with all the tools that I have. And I can cut sometimes through the bullshit that you are sometimes yearning for someone to do that for you because you are wrapped up in your own mind.
Your use of boredom is actually one of my favorite things watching you. Mm. Like I could see you, if you were bored, I would want you just say like get to essence. What is this?
Yeah.
What are you feeling? Like, and it was refreshing because I think when you spend so much time with the group of people and, you know, everyone wants to be heard and everyone wants to be listened to, but the energy can get very flat and very quickly if people are just spinning their wheels.
Yeah, and that's part of what we call, you know, people are that are about love, but they don't know dark love. They're all light and love and they give attention to rubbish and it takes away. So part of dark love is actually using a sword of, you know, sometimes cutting through bullshit and getting to the core. But the core, this core is the heart that is yearning to be actually expressed. And the group is actually like, oh, finally, because, you know, we were all polite. Mm. But we don't want to be polite. We want to be real.
Mm. Oh, so about, I guess, the amount of years you have facilitated is about my age. So, well, I'm 35. I came to facilitation. It wasn't something that I chose, you know. It wasn't something that I decided one day, oh, you know, what am I going to do with my life? I'm going to facilitate. I just went on this crazy caravan of love journey from a young age, realizing my soul and how my soul feels is the most important thing in my life. And I didn't care if I was going to be with no material, nothing in the world, but I'd stay true and faithful to my spirit or to that which is alive in my heart, you know, the fire inside of me. So I became a facilitator because I've been on this bandwagon of love for a while.
We took her. We saw her and we said, come with us. You belong here. And that's what we do. That's
pretty
what Easter does, actually.
Yes, it does. And I'm grateful for that. And for my deep soul friends that are also, in a way, also my mentors, my beloveds. They just like cooking in this pot together and from experience. But I'd feel like the essence of my facilitation is less that I've learned something, but I've experienced a lot and I've gone through hell in my life and realizing, okay, I can either be a victim to my story and I've been through so much, you know, hardship, and at some moment just realizing, oh, I'm so sick of this, my own suffering and my own victim, how am I going to shift this? And then from that, starting to see, my God, so many people around are going through all of this, so many people are spinning, so many people are suffering, and just kind of stepping out and just looking in and seeing, oh, okay, I know this, I know that. And then at the end, it's either someone's suffering or someone's in joy. So it's like how to make that leap. And I'm grateful to say that I've somewhat made that shift. I still sometimes have moments of feeling grief or not suffering anymore. It's become a bittersweet grief or like a delicious sorrow that I can drink from and be inspired from, as opposed that pulls me into, you know, a suffering. Mm. So I feel from that place I've been able to extend and actually respond and listen to others because I've been there myself. So I see anyone who wants to support others and facilitate, forget about spending thousands and thousands on a facilitation program. It doesn't really help. You know, it's like, go on the journey yourself, journey through to the other side, drink the cup, you know, sometimes the bittersweet poison, make it a medicine in your body and learn the art of your own medicine. Mm. Don't follow anyone else's way. And of course, we have guidelines here. We have a certain structure that we can, it's an intelligent system that we are, you know, operating under. But we all have our own medicine. So how Ohad does something is different to how I do it, how Caitlin, how someone else. And I'm starting to realize more and more my gift to others is really making my own medicine potent. And how I make that is like really digesting my own experiences and making them into my living wisdom. Living it, embodying it is the only thing that I can do.
You know, this tees up so beautifully something that I wanted to bring into honor on this podcast. So first of all, when we first sat down, we were introduced to our facilitators. We have a former Jewish rabbi. We have a mystical goddess who was raised in Islam in Egypt.
Strict Islam.
Strict Islam. And we have a South African Christian.
Yeah,
Caitlin. Who is now, Caitlin, who is now leading Bwiti retreats in Gabon. So what an extraordinary sort of cornucopia of human experience that's often sort of set at odds against each other. And then later on at a crescendo moment, I witnessed the most exquisite dance of healing and generosity between the two of you. Because in this training, the way that things are modeled and taught is exactly what you've just described. It's through real experience. And unfortunately, oh dear listener, I'm not going to tell you what I witnessed because you'll have to, first of all, it is entirely private. And second of all, it's part of the curriculum. And I think part of great experience design is that it's best not to know. Mm. It's best to go if you feel called and let it build. I just wanted to honor what it felt like to be present to you, Ohad, as the healer demonstrating your role. And by healer, really the channel through which loving healing was offered. Mm-hmm. To Yazi, just fully present and completely vulnerable in a group of 40 individuals, desperate for their own healing, desperate to learn, and then to come in full, absolute real presence and experience in front of us what you were then inviting us ourselves to witness and experience. And that's not something I've seen in anywhere. I mean, it's just not something I've seen. Mm-hmm. And I want to bring that up to honor it and honor that experience, my witnessing of it, and also circling it back to what you said about, like, you teach with who you are.
Yeah.
You teach with who you are.
Yeah. Otherwise, it would be a very dry teaching, I feel. Yeah. I think what we all love, or what I feel, is that we love juiciness. We want to feel the truth, think what is real, what is true, what is authentic, and what is plump with life, with essence. So, otherwise, it's a dry, mm-hmm. brittle, doctrinated thing. So. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and indeed, what you said, yes, Yasmin is from Egypt, and I'm from Israel, not only a Jewish rabbi, I'm a Jewish rabbi that from Jerusalem. Al-Quds. And definitely both of us had the potential to grow up so polarized from each other and so taking sides on an argument that is not really relevant at all. The thing of make love, not war, it's not just a hippie slogan. Actually, it's in biology. I will not go into brain science, but there is a thing that can be seen in mammals, that there are different systems in the brain that goes towards love or towards war. And when you actually involve Eros, there is a less aggressiveness in the system if it's involved in the right way. So, it is a beautiful thing for me. I'm so excited to work with Yasmin and to work with, and to, you know, in my work, I've facilitated in different countries and I've had the most amazing encounters with people from Saudi Arabia, from Dubai, from Iran, from different places on the planet, Pakistan, that for them to come and study with me and go through these experiences, and I'm sure Yasmin has her own list of and it's so touching because underneath those cultures, we are human beings. Mm-hmm. We are moved by our need to love and be loved, to be seen, and for our soul to shine. Mm. And from the fear that we feel, and that this fear that is being used in order to sculpture us to be soldiers of our country, and betraying that and standing for our soul is the next human thing to do. It's like, I don't care where you come from. I don't really care. I care just for the sweetness of the beauty of different cultures bring different beauties, but actually you're a human being. If you come from Japan, China, Egypt, Israel, doesn't matter. And Easter, that's why Easter is spreading all over the world, actually, from Japan, New Zealand, Africa, America. Because it touches this deep place that is respecting the culture, but going a level deeper to the core of what it means to be human.
Well, Easter does indeed touch a deep place.
Only we'll understand that.
Easter does indeed touch a deep place. And you were talking about war and the erotic, and you were talking in the training about the bonobo monkeys. And one of the things that I love is that there's a core meeting for ISTA facilitators. So ISTA is not a centrally organized organization. In fact, it's considered an organism. And you were saying that in the core meeting, that first comes love, then comes the erotic, and then comes business.
Yeah.
And let's handle the things that move everything first, and then we can talk about the money and the thing and how this thing is going to happen. And I love that about it. I think that this organization is really well served by not having a center, not having a guru, and then being co-created in this way where love comes first.
Yes. And also it's multi-generational. I mean, as Yasmin said, I probably facilitate almost the years of her lifetime. So we have facilitators like me who are in their 50s or older than me in their 60s and 70s, actually. And we have facilitators who are in their early 30s and bring the geniosity of the new generation. And we don't care. We don't care if you're a man, if you're a woman, if you're trans, if you are gender fluid. We don't care how old your body is. What we care is the shining of your soul. Like, are you there? And when we see someone, we recognize them and we take them. And, you know, they can, some people can rush through ISTA and become like a lead facilitator in, you know, a matter of a couple of years, because they're so in tune with who they are and their soul. There is no boxes to tick. ISTA is really an organism that is really listening to life force. And some people are just like, they meant to be here. And some people meant to leave also. That also happens. People do stuff in ISTA and then they go. And they get the blessing of us to go away in the world and do something else. Yeah, I'm actually very excited from the new generation, actually, even younger than Yasmin, that are coming. People in their 20s now that are kind of, there is a new generation of souls that is coming, that have come to the world, and they're so intelligent and they're so thirsty for what we bring, but they also get it so quick. You know, they don't need decades that took me to understand something. They get it in 2 days, and it's like, okay, what's next? kind of thing.
Yeah.
So we need something like ISTA more than ever, particularly in the context of the Me Too movement. This is when we need ISTA the most. This is when we need these kind of trainings. And yet it seems like a school like this and a training like this feels like a bit tricky in the context of Me Too. I would imagine not understanding what it's like to be at this training, just hearing about perhaps some of the exercises taken out of context, that I would be like, whoa, that seems like that could be a minefield for people's sense of trauma or trust. And in a landscape where there's so much polarization around gender and there's so much pain that I think is rightly being expressed in a way that had been bottled up for a long time. Yeah. And yet we have ISTA, and the time we've spent on consent, this wheel of consent, which I'll put in the show notes for the listener to check out, this wheel of consent concept, which we don't need to get into now, but it'll be in the show notes. ISTA seems like a really powerful technology to be offered into the space. But at the same time, it seems like it could be dangerous to try to offer this level of intimacy with a group of people, or might be perceived as dangerous. And I'm just curious how ISTA has been, in the context of Me Too, how it has been to be facilitating sacred sexuality, and whether it's changed ISTA, how ISTA has responded to the wave of Me Too.
Me? You? Me?
Yeah. You can both go.
Yes.
You go first.
No? Okay. First of all, we listen. We listen not to Me Too. We listen to the world. We listen to what, to the fabric of reality. Yes, Me Too is part of what happening or happened in the world. So we listen, and we listen to it from with a different ear. And so there's part of me too, if you look deeper, is the need of the feminine in all of us. It's not only women, but the feminine in all of us to get her voice back. And to stand for things that were done that were the norm, even that shouldn't have been, that were abusive. And yes, it is in the social structures, but it's also within us, as I spoke before about, you know, our mind raping our body. So it's a deep voice of the feminine to be heard. So on the social level, there's one thing, and then there is on the spiritual and interpersonal and inner personal. So we listen first. Yes, it is risky, especially for me, as a, you know, my skin is white, even though I'm not so white, but a white male facilitator is a risky place to be today, and facilitating sexuality is a risky place. But I see my work, I take this risk consciously. It's like when your work is cleaning the windows in the 28th floor, you tie yourself well, and you know that there is a risk in what you do, and you're excited about it. So there is a risk in especially being a male facilitator, and especially the way that we work in ISTA, where we don't separate ourselves. We don't create ourselves like we are away from the group. We're actually humans. We bring ourselves. We work in sexuality because we are sexual beings. And we bring ourselves honestly, with honest rawness to the field, as you know. So my thing with Me Too, I totally really support the need of the feminine to be heard. I want us to be more powerful than that. And being more powerful, meaning, like in this poem that you said, meaning that we are not looking to who can we sue next, which is actually a step of weakness. But being powerful is like, how do we change so we take a different route, and a route that is not abusive towards women, towards gays, towards people that are not in the boxes of society, and towards ourselves, towards the inner vulnerable places within ourselves. And I think sometimes the Me Too movement has been actually not so sensitive in that way.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so I do feel the Me Too movement, ISTA, supports taking responsibility for your own life. And coming from in a female body, I feel that's sometimes a hard thing, in the case that the immature feminine wants to blame sometimes and not take responsibility. But this is the beauty of ISTA. I feel like we learn that we are integrated beings. So because I am a woman, I also have my inner masculine. And often when a woman, I feel, feels threatened or victimized, it's like, look inside and see, how have you been treating yourself? And I feel that's a very edgy thing to say, because as women have been oppressed for a very, very long time. So on a social way, yes, we can see that. But also what I love about what we do is we take it all in and see, own your humanity, rather than look outside. It's like, what is happening in my inner ecosystem? What is happening in my inner union? How is my inner guy treating my inner woman? And sad to say, often it's happening inside. Of course, we go through so many injustices in the world. And there's nothing to say, oh yeah, that's right. But the most empowered action to take is to go inside and see, how can I empower myself? And how can I take responsibility for everything in my life 100%? That's a really challenging thing to say, but I feel it's the only thing we can do to really start to shift the social fabric of humanity. And so, yes, women have gone through a lot, and yes, we have the power to change it, but we don't have the power to change it outside. We can never change it outside. We have the power to change it inside.
Well, I'd also like to, as a participant, acknowledge, and this is not to give away too much of the curriculum, but there's a major consent component out the gate, which makes all these other things possible. And also just the way that the exercises are built up, whether it's a man's time to be held in a certain way versus a woman's time, like the actual structure of the week, to me, is really geared towards safety. I'm also a white-skinned male. I tend to feel more safe in environments than many other people do. I certainly did feel safe, and I certainly felt that those around me felt safe. And the understanding that those around me felt safe allowed deeper connection to be possible. And even so, I still had my moments where I observed myself. You know, I got a massage from someone that I started to just not want to happen anymore. And I was like, had to observe in myself, like, I'm not communicating my consent in this moment.
Tolerating it.
Yeah, I'm tolerating mm-hmm. something that actually is a no for me. Mm-hmm. And I'm witnessing in my body, but wait a minute, I'm a guy. I'm not, oh, this is the programming. Mm-hmm. This is the programming. So,
yeah. That's the time to hunt your little buffalo and stand up for yourself.
Yeah, that was a little buffalo. Mm-hmm. That's a baby mm-hmm. buffalo, but mm-hmm. like, you know, mm-hmm. the mama's nearby. Mm-hmm. yeah. Well, we are coming to the end of our time together. Mm-hmm. I feel like we've been hanging out for 7 days, so mm-hmm. I'm trying to like squeeze out my last bit of time mm-hmm. with the two of you, because mm-hmm. I loved the training. It was extremely impactful for me. And of course, now I have my integration from here. Like any great shamanic experience, then you get to watch the buffalo roam the streets of Lisbon or wherever else you might wind up after a training like this. But I'm very grateful. I feel like I have up-leveled in ways I didn't know that I needed to. And there is a level two. Tune in next time. I'll go do the level two in the dark winters of Iceland, and we'll report what that experience was like. Thank you both so much for the retreat, for the training, for agreeing to be on this podcast, sharing your wisdom with all the participants here and all the others who come into contact with you, and of course with our wonderful fellow travelers listening to the podcast today.
Yeah.
Yeah. Thank you, fellow listeners, and thank you for putting this out there so other beings can reach out. Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. And people who want to, you know, get more of ista.life. That's our website, ista.life. And there's information about the trainings, but also books that have the information and a songbook and all kind of information about the facilitators and the path that we walk. As much as can be exposed in a website, I think, as you can testify, nothing can be understood until you eat from the cake.
eat your fat buffalo cake.
Yeah.
Well, so that's the website for ISTA. And of course, ISTA is alive and well on the various different channels that you might find it. For those listeners who've connected with the two of you personally through this podcast, I know that there are some other offerings that you each have as well. And there's your music, Ohad, there's other things. How can people follow you both and learn more about y'all? Just make mention of maybe where people might go to find you, and I'll put it in the show notes.
Yeah, so I have a website called www.egyptian-templearts.com. So I work with, it's this International School of Temple Arts, but all of us have our own thing. Mm-hmm. So I work specifically with the lineage that comes from Egypt. So egyptiantemplearts.com. And I have lots of beautiful offerings, workshops, guided journeys, reading material. And you can find me on social media too, Jasmin Hannah.
Yeah, so my books, Kedesha, on Amazon about sacred sexuality. It's a trilogy of historical novels that expose things in history that are real. I mean, I'm a rabbi, so I spent many, many years in scholarship. So I made it a little accessible for people through novels that are historical, but also modern, like exploring this sexual shamanism and music. And the ashram that I have in Malta, which is ashramoflove.com, where we actually do this work, and ISTA is happening there, but also we go even deeper, including medicine work and more. That's what I can say.
My eyes gleamed a bit when you announced that today, when you're like, it's a school that's like this, and it goes on for a month. And I was like, oh my God, I will go there.
Yeah.
Well, thanks again. Mm-hmm. And yeah, I really appreciate not only your time, but the extraordinary humble devotion that you both give to this work that was so evident over these past 7 days and in this conversation. And yeah, I just feel very inspired. So thank you.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Thank you for joining us for Life is a Festival. If you like the show, you can support it by sharing it with your friends, following it on Spotify, or reviewing it on iTunes. If you'd like to get more involved, you can join our Facebook group, Life is a Festival, where we talk about the show and you can suggest new guests. If you really liked the show and maybe want a little bit more, visit my digital tip jar at patreon.com/lifeisafestival.com. Whatever you do, I hope today's podcast helped you make your life just a little bit more like a festival, and I'll see you on the dance floor.